Okay, hello everyone. Let's try that again. Come on, you're in Manchester for heaven's sake. Right, hello everyone. Hey, I love doing that. Right, that's it. That's the highlight of the day. It's all downhill from here. Right, thank you for coming down today, and I hope you've had a great day. My name's Tom Barlow, I'm from Real Media. I'm going to introduce this session, but just before I do that, I want to do a little bit of housekeeping and talk about some of the stuff that's coming up after this, because we see this conference hopefully as a launch of, you know, an entire movement around not only creating alternative media, but challenging the dominant media of our time and see if we can change the discussion. So, let me say this. First off, some of the sessions may have been short, some of them you might have missed, or people aren't going to get to speak here as much as they'd like, but we've produced a lot of behind-the-scenes videos, and we've been videoing all of today, and all of that will be up online on Monday evening on our website, realmedia.press. So please, you know, if you feel like you missed anything or you know, you want to hear more, check that out.
What does behind the scenes look like? People doing their makeup?
Yeah. A lot of makeup, a lot of green room action there, mate. So there's going to be cool stuff like that. We're also putting up a wiki up, and if you want to find out more, check out hashtag Real Media Training or hashtag Real Media, and there'll be stuff that's been up and around that we're trying to bring together all the stuff that's come out today. Most importantly, well, one of the important things for us is we produced a fake Daily Mail paper called the Daily Whale, and there's tons of them out there, and we want them to go to every corner of this beautiful island of ours and beyond. So if you can pick some up on the way out and spread them around where you are, that'd be great. There's going to be a Daily Mail or an anti-Daily Mail week of action on the 13th to the 20th. It's going to involve a bit of subvertising, some jokes, and it's going to involve a fake Daily Mail website. Which is still being built. So if you're from any organisation, if you've got any ideas, please send them to us and send us your adverts, send us your links, send us like images or just things that really annoy you about the Daily Mail. After that, the week after that, there's Occupy Rupert Murdoch, and Occupy have been, you know, pushing against the establishment quite a bit, and in the lead up to the elections, they're doing something pretty special down in London. You can find flyers for that outside as well, and that's the week after that, the 22nd to the 29th of March. So we're really trying to make this month about talking about the media, about how they set the agenda, and what we can do about it. And after that, in April, what we hope to do is launch Real Media, the website. We want to make this a one-stop shop for all new media and all independent public interest journalism and media on the internet. We want to bring it all together in one place so you don't have to follow 50 or 60 different people. So hopefully, again, that's going to be something that's going to be really good that comes out today. So the topic of the discussion today is this, or at this point, is where do we go from here? We've heard about the problems with the media and little things that we can do. And we're going to hear from some inspiring people about what is already being done and how we can create an alternative media. Today we're going to be hearing from Jamie Kelsey Frye, who is an advisor at the International Modern Media Organisation and also a guest editor of New Internationalist. We're going to hear from Natasha Bujel, co-founder of Union Street Media Arts, and from Angela Haggerty here, who's been the founder and editor of Common Space, which has been a new media platform in Scotland that's come out for the independence referendum struggle. So without further ado, we're going to hear from them, and then we'll open it up to Q&As at the end. Okay, so thank you very much. Jamie.
Yeah, round of applause for Real Media. Wow! Okay, 8 minutes, so I'm going to be on 8 minutes. So if you look, Tom sent out to all the people who are speaking, you know, next to their name, what they're meant to do. And I was like, generally inspiring, which was like being at a party last year where there was a famous comedian that we went up to and go, be funny! Ah, maybe not! Anyway, I can do that. There are a lot of hacks, as Tom said, a couple of them, New Internationalists, I've been contributing out to the New Internationalists, have been for about 5 years. So my job is like roving awareness raiser. As you all probably know, that we go for 4 years. It's a not-for-profit workers' cooperative, and it's been covering global justice brilliantly and very independently, you know, totally corporate-free. I also am on the advisory board for the International Modern Media Institute. Now that is connected to original WikiLeaks people, the people who set up Pirate Party. It's the Icelandic crew, and I'm going to talk about them during my 7 minutes and 14 seconds. I also was co-founder of Tall Fracking. I am an occupier, very much an occupier, and there's some great occupiers here today. So I'm also going to talk about the importance of direct action, creative, non-violent direct action. So, the talks this morning were genius. I don't know if all of you were there listening to Nafis and Sam, everyone, but it was mind-blowing. So I've cut out some of the better stuff I had, because some people did it better than me. Okay, I'm going to start with our story. Climate camp, bloody amazing, climate camp. We had on all our flyers a quote from Buckminster Fuller. Buckminster Fuller said, to depose a system, create an alternative system that makes the first system obsolete. And a lot of this real media thing is going to be that, without a doubt. I wanted to bring that up first because it makes me sound like I'm very intelligent, but also it is what this is all about. Look at the mainstream, well, let's stop calling them mainstream media. I don't know if Don O'Hara is here, but he's right. Let's call them what they are, which is the extremist far-right billionaires media, because that is what it is. Their weaknesses, their constraints, in a way. You know, we know about all the Obon recently and stuff like that. Yeah, we've got to stick to what our advertisers want. You know, the editors and the owners, they've got all that control and stuff like that. You know, that is a kind of weakness. And of course, something like Private Eye has a really good time lampooning the complete hypocrisy of the mainstream media. Something like Media Lens goes to town and sets them all on fire, and they're brilliant. And if you don't follow Media Lens, I really recommend them. Something like New Internationalist, of course, just completely ignores the narrative that mainstream tells us we should be following, and they've been following their own global narrative for a really long time. But let's go further than that, okay? What they're really constrained by is the paradigm. Their paradigm. And now's the time for us to actually start speaking from outside their paradigm. Remember Buckminster Fuller. Start talking from the system that's going to make their system obsolete. It's a really good way of looking at it. See, I'm being inspired. We've got a blank canvas. Now that's really interesting. When I say we, I know that probably about half the people here are already working in the alternative media. Look at this. There was a room 3 years ago, something, a whole load of alternative media people. We're in the ULU, Mallet Street, and we're all been brought together to discuss how we are going to cover a huge student demo that's coming up. So we all went round the circle, and there was Indie Media, there was New Internationalist, there was Distant Radio, there was Suki, a whole bunch of alternative media outlets, right? And then we ended, luckily it went this way around, we ended with Richard from Resonance FM. Richard said, "What are you doing? I thought we were alternative. You're all talking about covering it the same way the mainstream media does, put on a shoestring budget. Listen, this is alternative. It's a black canvas." And I thought, wow, that's amazing. What the hell? Give me an example, right? He said a week before there was this demonstration, small demonstration in Parliament Square, where the TSG surrounded them and gassed them. And that's really unusual. I never even knew that gas had been knocked out on activists, right? Anyway, he said our field recorder from Resonance FM was there with the activists. And what he did was he got the mic, right? And he said, right, we're surrounded by TSG. They're now sending in the gas. Please listen. We put the mic down here, and he got out of his book, 1920s Surrealist Poetry. And he started reading that. And the background sound was people going, ah, I'm here, please, ah! And the table was talking to me, and the hair was falling, and you could see the light. That's alternative, see? Oh really, this sounds crazy, but it's the way to go. You all know about Edward Bernays. So Edward Bernays, Freud's nephew, comes over after the war to the States and invents the sort of horrendous type of advertising that's destroyed most of our lives. And he also, first thing he did for the American state was say, right, we're going to stop calling that the propaganda department, we're going to call it public relations, all this stuff. What you don't know is this. The booksellers, they were people who went to Bernays, who was making a fortune, he's filthy neoliberalist, and they were saying, we want you to help us sell books, Edward. And he went, fine. What did he do? He made fucking bookshelves popular. Wow. See, that's what we've been up against the whole time. This kind of thinking, you know, that great national thinking. Unfortunately, he's for the bad guys. But we're the good guys, and we should think about that. Okay. So, number one, be creative. Okay, it's a blank canvas. Okay, think lateral. Think global, you know, internationalist, new internationalist. They've got a very good point. You know, they've been doing it 4 years. If you want to take on this system, It's global. Your whole movement's got to be global. Yeah. So as soon as like movements are nationalist, you're missing the point. This is a global problem, and it's only going to be resolved with a global movement, a global media movement, and it's there already. And be irreverent. So point number two, speak from outside the paradigm, okay? Let's look at the activist world. Reclaim the Streets, I'm 50, Reclaim the Streets blew my head. If you told us at the time, oh, you bloody activists, are we? No, we just shut down entire areas of London, and Liverpool, and Manchester, and Nottingham, and Bristol, shutting down entire areas, and turning them into parties, and reclaiming the streets, reclaiming the public space. It was genius, it was beautiful, it was joyous. There's only 5,000 people turn up at Euston, okay? Some of you were there. 5,000 people turn up at Euston. There's only about 5 people know where the hell we're going, yeah? None of this, none of that Facebook, none of that Twitter. 5,000 people still turned up, killer stickers everywhere. And then we all disappeared to, 1,000 go to Brixton, 1,000 go to Shepherd's Bush, 1,000 go up to Tottenham. Cops don't know where we're going. It's marvellous. Paradigm shifting stuff, okay? And then let's move on, pop pickers. Let's move on to... the G8 in Edinburgh, okay? First time I've ever seen that stuff, yeah? So we had the Eco Camp, the Stirling Camp, yeah? It's bloody huge. Great activists from around the world came there to try and shut down the G8, and we were organising to barriers. Wow, I've only got a minute left. Man, that's having such a good time. Can I have two? Yeah, okay. First time we see this kind of organising. It's really important, direct democracy, participatory democracy, no leaders, horizontalism. You know, that's great, that's paradigm breaking. Okay, then you've got UK Uncut. Brilliant! What an amazing thing they did. The whole country knows that Starbucks don't pay their tax because of the bloody UK Uncut. All right, and there's more and more examples. Iceland, okay. Let's put that in for the last minute. All right, it's really important what they're doing up there. Okay, so you know we're talking about paradigm breaking stuff. Rather than kind of feeding into their narrative, ignore it. Create our own. And we've now got the power to do that because of Tim Berners-Lee. Okay. IMI in Iceland, they're the same people who crowdsourced the constitution. Famously, in Iceland, when they had the economic collapse, they didn't bail out the banks, they banked up the bankers, and then they crowdsourced the bloody constitution. This is fantastic, and now they're going forward with IMI, okay, which is a method of protecting whistleblowers, a safe haven for journalists. You know, these are the ways to do it. We are actually not sort of, we shouldn't be punching against them, you see? Go round them, which is where it's all at. That's why this is so important. That's why, you know, this is redolent with hope. Nafees this morning, right, I'm finished now. Nafees Ahmed, okay? He's like, you know, great. You know, the Guardian sacked him. What a load of wankers. They're going to so regret it. But actually, it's great, because now I respect him more for not being with them. But the fact is, his whole thing is right. You know, and the international's talk about it a lot. We are in a crisis. You know, we're the first people in the world to be living in a time of extreme climate change, extreme weather patterns, you know, infinite wars for the last resources. But we're the last generation that can do anything about it. That's the crisis. And it's not like, oh my God, we're fucked. No, we are going to be alive. We're going to be the people who are here that have finally risen up globally. It's a global movement. And we have risen up and we have just gone round the bastards. See ya? So that's coming.
Pretty difficult here for Natasha. Natasha Boutrier-Wan from Union Street Media Arts.
Hiya. I just wanted to start by saying that it's great to be here and, you know, be in the room with so many inspiring people and hear some fantastic ideas and, you know, just to share, which really is kind of the point of what I want to share with you today is about more sharing. And I just wanted to start by talking about a little bit about a documentary that I've been working on. I've been researching a documentary about my grandfather-in-law, Gyani Sundar Singh Sehgal. He was a political activist in the 60s and 70s, and he campaigned for the rights for Sikh people to wear keep their turbans on instead of crash helmets, and also campaign for Sikh people to wear their turbans rather than conductor's caps for on buses. And one of the things that has come up during the research is it's made me realize that not much has changed in the political system, in the media, and the way that they behave from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and 90s to today. You know, those attitudes are still prevalent. You know, the bureaucracy is there, the structures are still there. But what has changed is us, our awareness, you know, our ability to take action, our confidence to take action. That's what's changing, and I think that's really something that we need to look at and realize the real power that we have inside us. So I want to talk to you about the opportunities that I've seen to shift the energy on our planet and the role that the media and alternative media can play in this. And I want to talk about three things. So the strategies that I've used, what I can see that people are doing around me, and also the human experience as well. So my academic experience is in fine art, politics, and international development, and I left university feeling really confused, actually, about the world, and I didn't really, you know, understand how I was meant to go out there and, you know, go to Africa and India and help communities to grow. I didn't really feel equipped. I didn't feel like I had the skills and the knowledge and the tools to be able to do that. And, you know, through my work, I've realized that experience, I think, is our greatest tool. Experience is our greatest asset and teacher. And I've been drawn back into studying, actually, over the past 3 years. I've been drawn back to studying naturopathy, nutrition, Reiki, energy healing, coaching, mentoring. And it's because the people that I work with in the communities and some of the most vulnerable, isolated communities here in Manchester and across the UK, I feel that in order to support these people to face the real challenges and the harsh realities of the world, I have to work holistically. I have to come at things from all angles. And through my organization, Union Street Media Arts, which I co-founded 6 years ago with my husband, we've always been very aware and always felt, you know, what's going on out there. There were so many things going on in this city, so many amazing organizations and groups doing incredible things, but even with the largest number of creative agencies, PR agencies, and production companies in Europe, we still didn't really hear very much about it. You know, we weren't hearing about these stories. We didn't see these people. We didn't see this incredible stuff that was going on. You know, and on top of that, not feeling that the broadcast media was representing the views of ordinary people, wasn't telling the truth, wasn't educating people very well. So our work is about supporting the growth of our planet through digital media. We run campaigns and we run social initiatives. We run training courses. We develop digital media content, run PR and social issue-based campaigns. And we also develop and work on community development and participatory arts programs, working with young people, BME women, very socially excluded children from Salford, for example, working all over the UK and all over Manchester. And we used to really focus on issues like race equality, social inequality, poverty, discrimination, youth unemployment, racism. And we realized that was becoming problematic, you know, really compartmentalizing those issues actually in a way was kind of forcing us apart, you know, and keeping us working in our silos and competing for scarce resources. And we've now changed our focus because of this. And we work with organizations to address the issues and the ideas that underpin the collective issues that we face as a society. Issues like local economic growth, health and well-being, attitudes, our relationships with each other, with ourselves and other people, inner peace, you know, knowledge, love and compassion. And if we can start you know, supporting groups and organizations and businesses, if we can be healthier, more confident, if we can find inner peace, if we can spread love and compassion, we can do all of this and we can solve all of our problems through creativity, through media, and through action. We're seeing more and more organizations going this way. You know, we're seeing a really major shift in the pattern of organizations that are taking action and service and undertaking service delivery, and alongside that, raising awareness and doing campaigns to really kind of get their voice out there, utilizing new forms of media, alternative media to do that. And what they're realizing is if change is to be sustainable, they have to do their service delivery, take action, but they also have to do this work alongside. They have to campaign, they have to get their voices out there. And many of these groups, you know, they aren't privy to these sorts of spaces. They're not aware of these spaces. They're not aware of where they can go and meet like-minded people. And so we spend a lot of our time kind of raising their awareness around that. And, you know, there's so many incredible groups here in Manchester, incredible people doing some fantastic work. Really simple things, but utilising, you know, alternative forms of media and arts. And they're trying to bring the digital into class into the fold. They're trying to open up new spaces, from youth groups in Mossside to women asylum seekers in the city. Last year we worked with Women Asylum Seekers Together, supporting them to develop a campaign to raise awareness about refugee asylum seeking women, about issues around deportation and immigration. And we supported them to develop a campaign to take roadshows into different parts of Manchester and connect directly with people in the community. They have films, video installations, they have, you know, all forms of creative arts performance just to connect directly with people and to support people to see that our issues are very common and relate to one another. So, you know, really inspiring stuff. And my final point, you know, I really feel that we've lost a sense of what, you know, the human existence experience is all about. We think of it in terms of the cradle to grave and the route from that, you know, one to the other. And we think that life is about growing up and facing physical and emotional abuse at school and settling a job that fits us into society and having a family, shielding them from the ills of society and then working really hard to settle on a pension that doesn't give you a great quality of life. But the human experience is so much more than that. It really is. It's about growing and evolving our consciousness. It's about achieving a higher sense of purpose and understanding the true nature of the universe and our place in it and our existence. And really, that's just the start. You know, we have enough resources to share and a whole possibility of different realities and different states that we are not even aware of. So I will finish now, Drew. You know, what do we do? I think really it's about evolving our consciousness and supporting others to do so. And for many of us, we're doing that already. So opening up more spaces and more platforms for people to be exposed to these new ideas, working at the grassroots, addressing issues that matter to people in the way that matters to them. You know, giving access to communities, to information, sharing our knowledge, sharing ideas. It's not easy. You know, when we go in there and we do this work, it's really difficult for people to understand how we are being manipulated by the media, by politics, by education. And often we can't provide the emotional support to people when they make these realizations, when they're going through these transitions. You know, and everything we're doing now is training for the challenges that we're facing in the future. And I think this is a fantastic example of how we can support people, how we can spread this love and knowledge in the community. So I just want to say thank you and continue spreading. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And finally, we've got Angela Haggerty here from Common Space in Scotland.
Hi everyone. Just to point out, just before I start, I'm not actually the founder of Common Space. I'd love to take the credit for it, but I didn't found it. I'm just the editor. I'm Angela Haggerty, editor of Common Space, which is a new media website that's just set. It's just 5 weeks old in Scotland. And actually, it's the brainchild of the Commonweal think tank. The Commonweal was set up within the last couple of years, and the idea was around the independence referendum was that they got together with academics, people that could create policy, and they actually created real policy papers, things that you could implement in an independent Scotland. It was non-party political, comes from a left-wing perspective, but the idea was to create real, tangible things that people could look at and explore and understand so that they would know that the independence debate wasn't just necessarily about ideas and theories of how things could be, but practical ideas and things that could be implemented. after the vote and the referendum, the peculiar thing, and I don't know how much knowledge anybody here has, so I'm going to speak to you as if you don't have any. The peculiar thing was that after the NDREF, after the no vote, the support just exploded for parties like the SNP, for organisations like the Commonweal. I think the SNP's membership quadrupled. It went up to 90,000. It's one of the biggest political parties in the UK. I think it overtook the Lib Dems pretty quickly in terms of membership. The support just went crazy. That also brought in a new stream of funding. So for the Commonweal, one of the things that it then created with that extra funding was a news service. And this came about because there had been a gap in the new media movement in Scotland for a straight rolling news service. There'd been a lot of analysis and commentary, some really, really great stuff, but there wasn't straight news. So the Commonweal decided to step in, set up the Common Space. They brought me in as editor. We are part of the Commonweal, but we are editorially independent. So it's important to point out that we're not a sort of a kind of PR vehicle for the Commonweal and its ideas and policies. We are trying to establish ourselves as a real, credible journalistic source. So just to give you an idea of what that new media movement in Scotland is all about, it came out of NDREF. NDREF was the catalyst for the new media. But there's probably a perception that the new media in Scotland is just a pro-NDREF, a pro-independence media. That's not the case. It was the catalyst for change because it was such a big issue. It was one of the most important votes that people could take part in. And people didn't trust the media to give them two sides of the story. People didn't trust the media to present the alternative to people fairly. So the new media probably set up, it was before, a good few years before the NDREF, I think, but it was only really in probably the year leading up to it that it really became something that was in the public consciousness. So websites that you might have heard of, Bella Caledonia, Wings Over Scotland, Newsnet Scotland, there was the National Collective, there was Independence Live, which was a broadcast service, there were individual blogs, there was just a massive amount of things just exploded on the scene. And they were really some fantastic work in terms of rebuttal of the mainstream media, so it was picking apart the things that the mainstream was putting out there that weren't necessarily true, that weren't representing the full story, so they would pick that apart. And then on the other side of that, they would just report alternative news, which then did have an influence on the mainstream coverage. So it was very, very effective. And you can see from the polling data and stuff that the support for independence, 45% they lost, the yes side lost the vote, but that was much higher than anybody had thought that it could ever be. And you have to credit the new media with a lot of that because they became the medium to inform people of the alternative. Now, social media was a huge part of that. It was kind of like the new media coming in and utilising the tools that the mainstream media has sort of struggled more to get to grips with. The mainstream media has grudgingly got to grips with a lot of digital media because it's upset their funding model as well. They don't particularly like it. They do it because they have to now. But the new media has really come in and made something of that. So that was a huge part of how it was able to do that stuff. And it also speaks to people in a different way from the mainstream. It's very different. Logistically, it was all online. The majority of it, apart from one particularly famous thing, the Wee Blue Book that Wings Over Scotland produced, that crowdfunded for and produced the Wee Blue Book, which was a very small blue book that was distributed throughout Scotland through volunteer networks. And that was informed people of the kind of basic facts in a nutshell of independence. That was a very successful thing as well. All of this was possible through crowdfunding. Hundreds of thousands of pounds were raised in that year preceding the NDREF for these websites. Wings Over Scotland just put on a very recent fundraiser in the last couple of days. I think it was yesterday actually they put this on. The editor, Stuart Campbell, was trying to raise £45,000, and this is to fund, I think, a year's wage, some new polls that you can do for the general election, that kind of stuff, a freelance budget. Tried to raise £45,000, and in one day, in less than a day, he'd raised £65,000. So there is a huge appetite out there for new media, and people are willing to fund it. There is money there. The challenge, I think, for us is finding the best way to kind of craft a model around this stuff. So just to talk about Common Space, again, we're trying to fill the gap for just a straight news service. One of the things that we've been able to do is employ a full team of journalists full-time team of journalists. None of the new media has been able to do that so far. It's an incredible achievement, actually, that the new media was able to do what it did when most people were doing it as a second job. They had full-time jobs and they were doing this sort of stuff on the side. Common Space, we've got me as editor and I've got a team of three journalists. We're 5 weeks old, and in 5 weeks we've been covering we've broken a string of exclusive stories. We've managed to get some even into the mainstream. The Independent picked up a story that we did about Sir Peter Hendy, head of transport for London, who was attending fancy male-only dinners that only had women there to wear tight dresses and entertain the men. We kind of uncovered that at the end, but even the Daily Mail picked that one up. My God, new media getting into the Daily Mail. So, didn't know whether I'd be proud of that one. So what we think that is very important in moving forward is the new media in Scotland is not a one-trick pony. It was not just about the Indie Ref. As I said, it was the catalyst for change. So the challenge for us moving forward is to expand what we do. So it's about, you know, how do we cover the general election? That's the next big thing for us. How do we move forward? And how do we get out of the echo chamber so that we're not just speaking to each other and like-minded people? How do we actually get out to people who aren't seeing our kinds of arguments? How do we get that message out to other people? Because those are the minds that we need to present the alternative to, the people that are mostly kind of consumed by the mainstream media coverage. We need to find a better way of getting out to them. Part of that is professionalising what we do, I think. It's sort of giving some legitimacy to what we do. The problem is that people still think the mainstream holds the authority. It's very difficult for the new media to be seen as a credible, authoritative source of information. And so one of the big things that we're trying to do is change that, and that is a real, real challenge for us. So also moving forward is about not being, you know, there's a risk in the new media in Scotland moving forward that it becomes very party political. Everybody's all for the SNP right now, that kind of stuff. We want to make sure that we don't go down that road, that we actually stick to the idea of doing independent journalism, and that we don't become too much about our political objectives or what we think, but actually just be straight about presenting the alternative, giving a voice to people who never usually get the voice. Instead of asking the same old people for comment whenever there's a story, ask different people for comment. Ask people that are presenting a different idea for comment, and get those different messages out that way. And hopefully, if our coverage can get big enough, it's not just about being on our platform, but we can then take that to the mainstream outlets, which we've done a couple of times successfully, and they then pick up the story. Sometimes you'd be surprised at how open they'll be to picking up a story. So that part of what we want to do is try and influence the mainstream coverage as well, rather than just be a platform for it ourselves. It's also important to mention maybe that the National launched as well after the new media explosion. There was only one newspaper out of all of the national newspapers. There was one weekly newspaper, the Sunday Herald, that supported independence. All of the rest of them either didn't declare, or they voted or they were in favour of no. So it was the Guardian, the Herald, the Scotsman, they all come out in favour of no. There was a severe imbalance, it's undeniable imbalance in the Scottish media around independence when only one weekly newspaper would come out in favour of it. So that then, NewsQuest owns the Sunday Herald, which then launched the National, which is now a daily newspaper that is in favour of independence. So it sort of tried to move into that market of pro-independence support. They know 45% of Scotland now wants to be independent. That's a huge market, but they're thinking commercially. I don't think of the National being the same as New Media in that sense, because it's owned by NewsQuest, which, while it's set up a brand new newspaper, it's not giving them enough money for staffing, it's not funding it properly. While they've set that up, they're cutting in the Herald and the Evening Times, which it also owns, they're still cutting editorial staff. So I think that the problems with media structure still exist, although the National has been a welcome addition to the alternative kind of media voices now that we're getting in Scotland. And that's a real testament to what the new media achieved in Scotland, is that it showed that there was a market for that kind of alternative voice, so much so that you had a mainstream publisher come in and then set up a brand new daily newspaper. When was the last time that you heard of a daily newspaper being created? It doesn't happen anymore, but it did in Scotland, and that was a real testament to the new media stuff as well. So moving forward, I think we've got a lot of challenges. The biggest one is funding. The Common Mail is funded by regular monthly donations. That's enough for us to employ 13 full-time members of staff. Four of them are at Common Space. But these are not, these are very unstable models of funding, and I think the big challenge for the new media is finding something that that allows us to plan for the long term instead of just getting by month to month. That's the big challenge for us. But you know, the mainstream is going through its own challenges as well when it comes to funding. This is not a profitable business for them anymore. So while they're going through a transition that they don't really like, that they're cutting all the time, that it's you know, they're grudgingly changing over to digital, from our perspective in the new media, we're actually, you know, this is a very exciting thing for us in new media. It's full of opportunity for us, and we are the more creative ones. We do more creative stuff with digital than you find that the mainstream players do. And that's my experience of, maybe it's important to say, I should have said at the start, before I went to Common Space, I worked for the Drum magazine for 2 years. I was the media and broadcast correspondent there, and I worked for a while in London. And that job, for 2 years, basically, I studied the funding and commercial models of mainstream media publishers. And that job involved interviewing and speaking to CEOs and senior commercial people in those publishing companies. And if you're terrified of, you know, if you think that it sounds horrifying, it really was horrifying to get an insight into how they think, how they view people, what they're trying to do. You are a statistic. You are just a consumer of advertising. So that was a really, really helpful insight into how they think. And it's only sometimes by understanding how they think and how they approach things that you can then formulate effective ways to counter that. So I think, for us, what we need to do, and this is really important, and why I'm really glad that I was asked to come down here today, is that we need to network more effectively. We need to be, we are going to get stronger if we're working together. We are not competing with each other commercially. We don't have this problem. We don't have to behave like mainstream publishers. We don't have to see each other as competition. And whether the new media wants to admit it or not, it probably does do a bit of that. You set something up, you want it to succeed. You want it to succeed more than you want other things to succeed, because it's your thing, it's what you're involved in. But we will be much, much stronger if we are sharing resources as much as possible and constantly talking about how we can, and thinking practically about how we can change funding models for the new media. This is vitally important. And if we can strengthen what we are doing financially and think long term, we can. Scotland is a great example of what can be done. We could really do some incredible things and shape some of the mainstream coverage.
Nice. I'm glad I'm not making a speech after that. That's cool. That's it's really inspiring. There's a lot of hope. We're going to open it up to a couple of questions, but before people start leaving or think about the questions, I want to mention a couple of things. You know, firstly, pub. We're going to the pub after this. We're going down to the Student Union on Oxford Road. Yes, well done, Manchester. applauding the pub. Right, yeah, that's where we're heading. We're heading down there. We're going to go and get some drinks. We're going to have a chat. We're going to join the people from the People's Assembly as well. There's other events going on in Manchester. Everyone's heading down to that place. You know, again, we've got to work together. Let's hang out. Let's chat. Let's, you know, come up with some good ideas. Secondly, I know the temptation will be, when we pass the mic around, to do a shout-out for your organisation or for something you're doing. And that is obviously fair enough, and we love to advertise that. But instead, send us an email with an advert, a press release, anything like that. We will promote it. We will support you. And instead, we'd like to open up this time for questions. Thirdly and finally, we are running now a fundraiser that started yesterday to help fund our anti-Daily Mail Week of Action. There's loads of free papers out there. There's loads of other bits and bobs. And eventually that will lead into funding real media, hopefully, creating a fund that will support all media organisations. So if you can check that out and check out the website after this, that'd be great. Even 50p a week or anything like that will be massive help if we all start working together. I think we can do it. So on that note, can we open up? Drew, you're going to take around the mic or someone? Yeah. Can I see some hands for any questions? And if you can, direct them at someone. Okay, right. And we've got. I'm going to go with. Yeah, we've got two up there. Is anyone down here in the? No. Okay. So we've got two up there. Yeah. Did you want to chuck it up? Yeah. You're tall. Come on, Drew. Come on, you're tall. Okay, fine. Yeah, you go with that. I know you can do it.
Yeah,
you can.
It was about the funding. Earlier on, one of the workshops, we were talking about how, like, you can't really take advertising. And I remember in the early days of Occupy, when Occupy News set up, and we talked at one stage, but it didn't happen, about the value of advertising from ethical and good advertisers. See, as a consumer of independent media, I would be really happy if part of the job of independent media was to research the ethics behind the advert. So to me, then I could get past that having to chase the label and see whether it was safe. If the adverts in there match the ethics of the publication itself, and I could say, oh, safely, I know that's a good one. That's just a thought for funding.
Okay, cool. Thank you. And we'll take you, and then we'll come to Jane.
We talk about the media as biased and propagandist, but you also have to realise that you have to sometimes engage with what they're actually saying. There is some snippets out there, and you have to be able to know what the feeling is like. You also have to give platforms to opinions that we may not totally agree with, so we have to sometimes converge with people who don't like an opinion. That's how the mainstream do. They get people riled. They go into them, you know, and they don't say, oh, I'm sorry, but you're not allowed. It's not politically correct to voice that opinion. They give everybody an opinion, because otherwise the mainstream, the people who consume the tabloid press, will say, oh, well, we wouldn't be allowed because these are all left-wing people. In a way, they won't allow our voices to be heard because they will criticise us and say, we're naughty children, so our voices won't be heard in this media platform.
Okay, thank you. Are there any final questions? We could take a third one, and then we've one here in the middle right in the green top. Drew will come to you with the mic. That's... Oh, no. Sorry, I was going to go. I pointed to this person here, now I'm going to feel bad. Both of you. Go both. Yeah. Both of you. Both of you. Yeah.
Just a quick one. Are you noticing in Scotland, like, after this amazing independence campaign, that people are a lot more open to independent media now than they were beforehand, when a lot more people probably thought the media didn't like them a lot?
And someone here.
It's a continuation of the point that Chat made up there, and it is a question as well. And the mainstream media has, in effect, purged out a section of people who have no voice and cannot enter that conversation. So the usefulness of independent media is that it will include those voices, but the independent media is politically correct on a left-wing basis, so they won't include those voices. So how do we get the independent media to include the breadth of voices that are not politically correct, and allow the dialogue to take place, because that's the point of diverse media? And in fact, what we're getting is we're getting two camps. So one of the things that are happening my example is going to be from the Muslim community, okay, is that there are not politically correct Muslims, and they must not have a voice, they must not speak, they must not have any platform. And I'm not talking about ISIS. So what happens is all of these not politically correct Muslims.
Can you give us an example?
Okay, so for instance, somebody who believes in a united, free Muslim world, but also thinks that's consistent with democracy. Now, the name of united, free Muslim world is a caliphate, and that is anti-terror law. So they won't be able to explain that. You could even put it in Marcus Garvey's area, if you knew who Marcus Garvey was. However, that voice will be out. There's many other forms of this divergent opinions, but because they're not allowed to speak, you actually don't get any of the nuances. So you won't, they won't be there. They probably, if they're guys, they might be sexist, they might be, you know, politically incorrect in other areas. Some of them used to be before they were a threat to the wall, Margaret Thatcher voters. So that really politically incorrect.
Well, the people who do publish them actually get a lot of abuse threat. That's the problem.
Yes, that's okay. The problem.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, it's a really interesting discussion, and I think it's an absolutely huge one. The idea of trying to engage in that in any meaningful way in 5 minutes is probably ridiculous. It's probably one of the major questions of our time, and it will be one that we will be struggling with. But we'll try and struggle with it openly. I want us to discuss how we talk about this, by producing videos, by writing about this, by talking about it openly for people to engage with. Having said that, I'm going to pass over to Jamie, who was interested in coming back on the point about funding advertising, and then yourself on the point about Scotland and other bits, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Brilliant.
Yeah, just that one on funding. Ethical Consumer, isn't it? Ethical Consumer? Yeah, they're based in Manchester, so there's an organisation that's been a long time that you can check it out. Whether they're ethically sound or not. There's also an app apparently that's just come out, you just like brush it over any product and they'll tell you the whole history. So we're getting there, which is brilliant. But you internationalists have stuck to this the whole time, and there ain't that many people that you can get funding from. If you're going to be really strict about it, you're going to end up with funding from a couple of hippie festivals and ecotricity and stuff like that. It's not limited. But this new media that's obviously growing in front of our eyes exponentially has the opportunity to underline that fact, underline how few products and companies are actually ethically sound, to put pressure on them. You know, the more that it rises, you know, early on today, Carrie-Anne Mendoza, Scriptonite, she was saying how our media already can go viral. Well, companies are going to have to look at that, aren't they? You know, so it's a great way of putting pressure. And the third way of dealing with this is also, you know, when they have. And now, a word from our sponsors, you know, let's use humour. And now, a word from the people who will never sponsor us because, you know, and make a joke out of it. It's embarrassing that these girls, you know, like greenwashing bollocks, you know. And now, a word from the BP, who will never sponsor us because, you know. But, you know, it's at the moment, it's difficult, but I think it's going to change because of this kind of new media development.
Thank you. And for anyone who's offended by foul language, apologies.
Did I say again? sorry.
I am not.
Sorry, man, I didn't know it.
Just to come back on the point about media bias, and possibly, I don't know if there's any kind of crossover with what you were talking about, it's a little bit different voices being heard. There is a risk with new media because often the new media springs out of left-wing activism, that it then just becomes a sort of a purely left-wing activist medium, which then doesn't really speak out to the people that you're trying to get to necessarily. So I think the point is that it's very important that we make sure that we don't exclude the new media to only include voices that we tend to agree with. It can't be that way. The most effective way to defeat any argument is to confront the argument, is not to try and suppress the argument or shut the argument down or shut the voice out. Hear the voice, let the voice talk, and then analyse that, then talk, then get more information, more comment, more, explore it properly. So for Common Space, certainly one of the things I want to do, I talked about it before, it's the idea of an echo chamber. There's the risk that you end up just speaking to each other and agreeing with each other all the time, particularly in social media. You retweet and you like things and write on, that nailed it, totally nailed it for you and the people that you agree with, for your network, but not necessarily for everybody else. So in order to reach out and to get to those people, it's important to take new media outside of that sort of the left-wing activism that it often sort of gets constricted by, and make sure that you're getting out into all of those other arguments as well, particularly the ones, if you're going to talk about independent journalism and media, particularly the ones that you're uncomfortable with, because those are the ones that you're actually trying to defeat if that's what you're setting out to do and presenting that alternative voice and idea. So, yeah, that's, for us anyway, at Common Space, that's one thing we want to do.
Natasha, yeah, sorry. And, Natasha's actually up for taking that on as well.
Yeah, I just continuing from what Angela's saying, you know, about that, you know, we can't exclude those voices and we must confront them. And I think You know, I spoke about compassion. I think that's really, really key. I think we need to be thinking about how we approach these people, these groups of people, these people that are very hidden in society and very hard to hear. How can we bring their voice out, and how can we transform their thinking, you know? And it is about compassion and working at the grassroots. It really gives us the opportunity to create safe spaces for those people to feel comfortable and to feel that they can, you know, they can share their opinion, and that it's okay to think those things, you know, and that they're not going to be judged, and that way we can have meaningful dialogue that's non-confrontational, that's constructive, and we can transform people's thinking. We can, you know, show them alternative ways of thinking, and maybe we will change our thinking. Maybe we can become more empathetic. Maybe they will change their thinking. Maybe they will become more empathetic towards us. So I think safe spaces are very, very important. People are on their own journey, and we have to respect that. You know, all of us are on our own journey. People are at different stages of that journey, and we need to understand that broader picture, so that we can connect with people in a more compassionate way and bring those ideas out.
Right. Well, that is 5 o'clock on the dot. So that was accidentally perfect. Thank you for reading my mind. I'd like to make a final couple of announcements sort of reiterate some things, and then I'd like to encourage us all to hang out in a place that's not quite as hot, because I've lost about 0.5 pound. So I really do want to encourage, we do want to build a functioning, forward-thinking, independent media, but we also want to start recognising that that in society the things that we love and we want to see exist do require us supporting it, and that may be financially, it may be with your time, your energy, or sharing things, but hopefully this isn't just a passive experience. This is something that we positively come out and away from, and we actively engage in. And so again, I'll reiterate, we've got papers outside, chuck them around. We've got weeks of action coming up, you know, Anti-Daily Mail, Occupy. We've got Real Media launching, and there's lots of other great things coming up as well, and we will be advertising those things, so please keep an eye on those things, and you know, please engage us, and please can you give a hand for our wonderful speakers. I thought they were really, really good. Yeah. Thank you for coming
down. Don't crack yourselves, it's like America.
I'll, for those who want to find out about stuff that's happening tomorrow, please come and find us afterwards by the paper stall in a couple of minutes. Yeah, because it depends how bad a hangover is. It's a quite honest answer. There's nothing structured set up, but there may be a chinwag going on. Thank you all for coming down. I hope you've had a lovely day, and let's have a lovely night as well. I'll catch you soon. All right, cheers. So, bye.